Welcome to Class Matters, an educational program examining the role played by social classes and the class divide in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Rich Whitney.
I'm Paula.
We discuss matters of class because class matters. To this day, the belief that the Trump campaign collaborated with and received assistance from the Russian government during the 2016 campaign remains an article of faith for many diehard Democrats and their cheerleaders in the corporate media, despite all of the evidence that has discredited it. The notion that Russia hacked into the DNC servers was disproven by independent journalists long ago, and the FBI never even examined the actual servers, as we have reported on this program. The claims about Russian bot farms flooding social media platforms with pro-Trump messages in 2016 has been debunked as nonsense by independent investigators and journalists long ago, as we have also reported on this program. The Mueller investigation, despite having virtually unlimited resources to investigate the allegations, came up with a big fat nothing, failing to uncover any credible evidence of Russian collusion, and led to no indictments. In the aftermath of that, Attorney General William Barr appointed experienced prosecutor John Durham as special counsel to investigate the FBI's Operation Crossfire Hurricane, which, from 2016 into May of 2017, looked into allegations of coordination between the Trump campaign and Russians during the 2016 election. Durham's investigation was completed on May 12th, and Durham's report was released 1 week ago today. And yet, most of the corporate media responded by either ignoring the report or downplaying its significance by declaring, as Rachel Maddow did, that it possessed nothing we didn't already know, which is not true, but it tacitly concedes that the report was accurate. This response was predictable, as most of the corporate media in this country now operates in close coordination with the top leadership of the Democratic Party. As Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Chris Hedges recently wrote at consortiumnews.com, "Myths are impervious to facts. They fulfill an emotional yearning. They are a short circuit from reality into a world of childish simplicity. Hard and painful questions are avoided. Thought-terminating clichés are spat out to blissfully embrace a willed ignorance." The cynical con the Democratic Party and the FBI carried out to falsely portray Donald Trump as a puppet of the Kremlin worked, and continues to work, because it is what those who detest Trump want to believe. The myth allows us to believe that Democratic politicians, like the establishment Republicans who have joined them, are the guarantors of a democracy that they have destroyed. For real reporting on the Durham Report, we recommend that you read Chris Hedges' article, a couple of very good articles at racket.news, and a very good article at covertactionmagazine.com. But perhaps one of the most powerful analyses of this report and its significance comes from Glenn Greenwald's recent reporting at rumble.com. In a report entitled "Durham Report Obliterates FBI for Russiagate Misconduct," Rumble is the free speech alternative to YouTube, and you can watch the entire report as well as a lot of other great reporting by Glenn Greenwald by going to rumble.com and searching for Glenn Greenwald. Without further ado, here's Glenn.
The Mueller investigation concluded with no indictments of that kind, and then the report explicitly concluded that they've searched everywhere and yet found no evidence for the core accusation that there was collusion. It was a longtime, very respected prosecutor, renowned for his bipartisan respect and for his reputation for apolitical independence and his doggedness as a prosecutor, John Durham, who was appointed in April 2019 by the Justice Department, the same month the Mueller investigation concluded and the Mueller report became public, who was tasked with investigating the origins of this hoax. How is it that American politics were drowned for at least 3 years in a completely fraudulent conspiracy theory, one that put a stranglehold on the U.S. government, that distracted almost all of our attention on a daily basis away from what mattered onto this complete fairy tale? And the investigation by John Durham has lasted 4 years. It officially closed late last week, when the 306-page report that he authored was sent by Merrick Garland to the Congress as the official report of the Durham investigation. And one of the things we find is that even in very unlikely places, including the media outlets, which most aggressively and relentlessly and single-mindedly promoted this conspiracy theory, were forced to admit that this report is devastating to the FBI and to the Russiagate narrative and highly exonerating of Donald Trump. So here is the transmittal letter from John Durham to Merrick Garland, where he submits his final report. And this is where he says, quote, "The office also considered, as part of its investigation, the government's handling of certain intelligence that it received during the summer of 2016. This is now quoting from the report. That is John Durham defining the scope of his investigation. That intelligence concerned the purported, quote, approval by Hillary Clinton on July 26, 2016, of a proposal from one of her foreign policy advisors to vilify Donald Trump by stirring up a scandal claiming interference by the Russian security services. This was not an investigation that emanated from the FBI. This was a narrative, a campaign tactic that emanated from the Clinton campaign, which obviously had all sorts of vital connections to the senior leadership of the US government under President Obama, who was still president during the 2016 election. Durham goes on, quote, "We refer to that intelligence hereafter as the, quote, Clinton plan intelligence. Director of National Intelligence John Ratcliffe declassified the following information about the Clinton plan intelligence in September 2020 and conveyed it to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Quote, in late July 2016, U.S. intelligence agencies obtained insight into Russian intelligence analysis alleging that U.S. presidential campaign Hillary Clinton had approved a campaign plan to stir up a scandal against U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump by tying him to Vladimir Putin and the Russians' hacking of the Democratic National Committee. The intelligence community does not know the accuracy of this allegation or the extent to which the Russian intelligence analysis may reflect exaggeration or fabrication. But according to his handwritten notes, CIA Director John Brennan, now of course with NBC News, subsequently briefed President Obama and other senior national security officials on the intelligence, including, quote, the alleged approval by Hillary Clinton on July 26, 2016, of a proposal by one of her senior policy advisors to vilify Trump by stirring up a scandal claiming interference by Russian security services." This is incredibly devastating, this finding, because it proves that this was not a legitimate law enforcement investigation, nor was it a legitimate intelligence investigation. It was cooked up as a campaign tactic by Hillary Clinton, and then that was briefed to President Obama and to CIA Director John Brennan, which means the highest levels of the government knew that it was Hillary Clinton's intention to concoct this false claim linking Donald Trump to the Kremlin and to try and claim that the Trump campaign participated with or conspired with or colluded with the Kremlin in their hacking of the DNC and John Podesta's email, essentially accusing them of a crime and then using the FBI, weaponizing the FBI to go off into an investigation, even though there was no basis under the law for launching that investigation, that had only one purpose, a political one, to sabotage Trump's campaign. Now, there were people inside of the FBI in late October of 2016 who wanted it to be known that there was no evidence linking Donald Trump and the Russians, because by this point it had become one of the predominant themes of the 2016 campaign. Every day, it's vital to remember, leading media outlets, The Times, The Post, CNN, NBC News, were headlining this fairy tale that came from the bowels of the Clinton campaign and then connected to the FBI. And here you see the New York Times, and they were vilified for this truthful article. You see the headline, "Investigating Donald Trump, FBI sees no clear link to Russia." Quote, "For much of the summer, the FBI pursued a widening investigation into a Russian role in the American presidential campaign. Agents scrutinized advisors close to Donald J. Trump, looked for financial connections with Russian financial figures, searched for those involved in hacking the computers of Democrats, and even chased a lead which they ultimately came to doubt, about a possible secret channel of email communications from the Trump Organization to a Russian bank. Law enforcement officials say that none of the investigations so far have found any conclusive or direct link between Mr. Trump and the Russian government. And even the hacking into Democratic emails, the FBI and intelligence officials now believe, was aimed at disrupting the presidential election rather than electing Mr. Trump. Now, I can't overstate the rage and indignation that was directed at the New York Times for this article, both when it appeared and since. Because the predominant view of the American elite class in politics and journalism is that there is only one valid goal in life, in politics, in journalism, and that is the destruction of Donald Trump and his political movement. And they really do believe, they have really come to believe over time, that the most significant and the most ethically obligatory mission of everybody, of every relevant institution, is that single-minded goal. And that anything that deviates from that goal, that overarching paramount goal to destroy Donald Trump and his movement, anything that deviates from that mission is inherently improper, is inherently unethical, even if it means that journalists are telling the truth while they do it. That was, for years, the dominant ethos in American journalism, that you do not tell the truth if there's any possibility it might help Donald Trump. Instead, you're required to endorse disinformation and to lie because the goal of defeating Donald Trump is so paramount that it renders everything, including lying and deceit and censorship and disinformation, justified. That was what made that Sam Harris video resonate so virally, was that he was one of the few people, unwittingly, to be so candid in that worldview that has corrupted almost every major liberal institution in the United States. And it continues to this very day and will continue into the 2024 campaign. Now, at the time that this tactic was first unveiled of trying to link Donald Trump to the Russian government, I wrote my first article on Russiagate, which was on August 8th, 2016, because I could see the emergence of this tactic. And every day I was seeing the FBI and the CIA leaking information to the Washington Post and the New York Times and NBC News designed to forward and advance this McCarthyite script that was dug up from the deepest levels of the CIA, these crusted scripts from the 1950s, trying to tie your political opponents to the Kremlin, argue that you're disloyal to the United States, that you're somehow in bed with the Russians. And the headline of my article, which you see there, was, quote, "Democrats' tactic of accusing critics of Kremlin allegiance has a long and ugly history in the United States. Democrats are mimicking and echoing many of the most shameful people and tactics of the 20th century." Because I really couldn't believe that something so blatantly McCarthyite, something that we were all taught to regard as one of the most shameful moments in American history, the baseless accusations that huge number of people who had no ties to the Kremlin, in fact, were loyalists to the Kremlin, had been dredged up, rejuvenated by the Clinton campaign and specifically by U.S. security state agencies. And I want to show you the very first video that the Clinton campaign launched in mid-2016 that made me recoil instinctively. And I genuinely couldn't believe that every Democrat and every liberal and especially every leftist who had been inculcated with the evils of McCarthyism were not reacting in similar ways, because the script was so blatantly scummy and baseless. Let's take a look.
Putin's been a very strong leader for Russia.
He killed journalists that don't agree with him.
At least he's a leader.
Putin did call me a genius.
He said very nice things about me.
Trump always seems to upend American foreign policy tradition in a way that benefits Vladimir Putin.
The prime objective of the foreign policy of Putin has been to destroy NATO.
NATO is obsolete and it's extremely expensive to the United States.
Manafort has represented the pro-Vladimir Putin prime minister
Yanukovych.
In Ukraine, Yanukovych.
So you get the gist there, this kind of sinister music playing, every kind of scummy tactic of guilt by association that this person said nice things about this person. And the fact that Donald Trump was doing what should have been done a long time ago, but he was really the first politician to have the courage to do, which is to stand up and question the ongoing viability of NATO, a military alliance that was created to protect Western Europe from a country that no longer exists, the Soviet Union. And it's something that we were pouring enormous amounts of money into, way beyond what the Europeans were bearing. And even though they have in many ways, their citizens a better quality of life than huge numbers of Americans, questioning the viability of NATO, asking why the United States should be willing to risk a war with the world's largest nuclear armed power over Ukraine, a country that Barack Obama repeatedly said had no vital interest for the United States. Just the attempt, essentially, to equate questioning of American foreign policy with disloyalty and allegiance to Moscow, the ugliest tactics that have been used. These were the ones being launched by the Clinton campaign, and then very quickly, the FBI's powers of investigation were weaponized in order to give credence to it. Now, let's look at a couple more passages from the Durham report, because I think it's vital to understand what it is that he concluded. Quote, based on the evidence gathered in the multiple exhaustive and costly federal investigations of these matters, including the instant investigation, neither U.S. law enforcement nor the intelligence community appears to have possessed any actual evidence of collusion in their holdings at the commencement of the Crossfire Hurricane investigation. Crossfire Hurricane was the code name for the investigation of the FBI into Trump Moscow links. There was no evidence in their possession of collusion at the time they launched that investigation. Instead, he says, quote, upon receipt of unevaluated intelligence from Australia, the FBI swiftly opened the Crossfire Hurricane investigation. In particular, at the direction of Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, who was later fired for lying to the FBI, Deputy Assistant Director for Counterintelligence Peter Strzok opened Crossfire Hurricane immediately. Strzok, at a minimum, had pronounced hostile feelings toward Trump. The matter was opened as a full investigation without ever having spoken to the persons who provided the information. Further, the FBI did so without, one, any significant review of its own intelligence databases, two, collection and examination of any relevant intelligence from other U.S. intelligence entities, and three, interviews of witnesses essential to understanding the raw information it received, or four, using any of the standard analytical tools typically employed by the FBI in evaluating raw intelligence. Had the FBI done any of that, the FBI would have learned that their own experienced Russia analyst had no information about Trump being involved with Russian leadership officials. Nor were others in sensitive positions at the CIA, the NSA, and the Department of State aware of such evidence concerning the subject. In addition, FBI records prepared by Strzok in February and March of 2017 show that at the time of the opening of Crossfire Hurricane, the FBI had no information in its holdings indicating that at any time during the campaign, anyone in the Trump campaign had been in contact with any Russian intelligence officials. It was not until mid-September that the Crossfire Hurricane investigators received several of the Steele reports. Within days of their receipt, the unvetted and unverified Steele reports were used to support probable cause in the FBI's FISA applications targeting Page, a U.S. citizen, Carter Page, who for a period of time had been an advisor to Donald Trump. As discussed later in their report, this was done at a time when the FBI knew that the same information Steele had provided to the FBI had also been fed to the media and others in Washington. Now, again, there are a huge number of highly incriminating components of this report, which we will cover in a later show, including the fact that, unlike the investigation into Trump's ties with Russia, for which there was no evidence in the FBI's possession to justify an investigation, there was abundant evidence in the FBI's possession to justify investigating whether or not Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation had received illegal foreign donations. That was where the foreign influence was coming from, and yet Comey and McCabe, according to this report, squashed every attempt to investigate that. There are other incredibly incriminating parts of this report, and we know, for example, that a senior FBI lawyer ultimately pled guilty to submitting false information to the FISA court to justify spying on Carter Page. Remember the Trump accusation that Obama spied on his campaign? It was not only absolutely true, but it was done by lying to the FISA court to the point where an FBI senior lawyer was forced to plead guilty to having done that. Now, what I find really interesting and amazing is that the investigator here, the prosecutor here, John Durham, is somebody who had long been talked about as being a highly respected and apolitical actor. This is not someone they can dismiss as being Clarence Thomas or some right-wing Trump appointee. John Durham has been around forever, and he's always been talked about in the most respected terms. So here you have, and this is amazing, that this is not the top dominant story in the United States, and it isn't because our media institutions are irrevocably and fundamentally corrupted. To the extent they weren't when Trump emerged, they most certainly are now. So here you have one of the most respected federal prosecutors in the country, who has long been given politically fraught cases to investigate because of his reputation for being apolitical, for following the facts wherever they take him. And he just issued a 306-page report that concludes with ample evidence that the powers of the FBI were radically and consistently and repeatedly abused for overtly political ends. Not just for any overtly political ends, but with the specific intention of coercing an outcome in the 2016 election that the ideologically and politically motivated agents and senior leadership of the FBI wanted. We've read Peter Strzok's emails to Lisa Page talking about how everything must be done to ensure Donald Trump never becomes president of the United States. These were the people, Jim Comey and Andrew McCabe and Peter Strzok, who were in charge of the FBI, who steered the FBI to abuse its powers in the most extreme way, in the most corrupt way, in the most illegal way, to interfere in our domestic politics, exactly what the U.S. security state was never supposed to do. The worst sin of the U.S. security state. That is what this report by a highly respected prosecutor documents in great detail. How is this not the biggest story in the United States? It is because they have purposely encouraged people to forget how dominant this scam was for years, how affirmed it was by every institution that insists to you that they are the guardians against disinformation, that you have to empower them to protect you from lies because they are the owners of truth. It destroys the credibility of every leading media outlet, with a few exceptions, in the United States and of the FBI and of the Obama administration that permitted this and oversaw it knowing that this emanated from the Clinton campaign. So this has to be erased. It has to be dismissed as yet another nothing burger. It got some coverage for one day and now it's gone. They're counting on you to just embrace your own impotence, to decide that it's just too much corruption, that there's nothing that can be done about it. That's the learned helplessness they try and foster in the population. And I think what is so worth realizing is that this is not an isolated case. We already knew that the 2020 election was exactly the byproduct of the same abuse of power from the same agencies, the U.S. security state. That reporting that the New York Post was able to do about Joe Biden and the pursuit of profit in Ukraine and China and elsewhere through his son and brother had the potential to sabotage Joe Biden's campaign. Joe Biden barely was declared the winner of the 2020 election. And they were desperate to discredit that reporting by concocting another lie, not the one that they used for the 2016 election, that Trump was in bed with the Kremlin. Instead, the lie that the Hunter Biden reporting and the laptop was Russian disinformation, which was used not only to discredit the reporting, to not only stigmatize everyone who raised it, but to censor it from Facebook and Twitter. And the fact that this was done by 51 former intelligence operatives was always proof that this actually was done by the CIA. There's no such thing as former intelligence operatives. When you reach the highest level of the CIA, you can go work for NBC News or CNN. You are still an intelligence operative. Everyone knows that. But we recently discovered, in case anyone had doubts about that or that more proof was required, that in fact, the CIA itself was directly involved in the creation and dissemination of that lie. Here from the Wall Street Journal, May 11, 2023, you see the headline, Biden's CIA assist in the 2020 presidential election. So it's two elections in a row where the U.S. security state is intervening on behalf of the Democrats to defeat Donald Trump. Well, there you see the subheadline, the agency, not only retirees, but the agency itself, the CIA, turns out to have worked on the Hunter excuse letter. Quote, it seems President-elect Biden on November 4th, 2020, owed thanks not only to a cabal of former intelligence officials, but to the CIA itself. That's the big takeaway of this week's interim report from House committees detailing the origins of the October 2020 disinformation letter about Hunter Biden's laptop. An earlier release revealed that Joe Biden's campaign helped engineer a statement from 51 former U.S. spies that claimed the laptop had, quote, all the classic earmarks of a Russian information operation. That letter provided Democrats, journalists, and social media companies the excuse to dismiss and censor evidence of Hunter's influence peddling, removing an obstacle from his father's path to victory. Now we find out that, according to a written statement supplied to the committee, an active CIA official joined the effort to solicit more signers to the letter. The campaign to elect Joe Biden extended into Langley. I don't think it's possible to overstate the danger that these events reveal that we face in the United States. The people who prattle on about the need to protect democracy from authoritarianism are authoritarians. The media outlets and the billionaire-funded organizations that claim that they need to protect you from disinformation are the most aggressive purveyors of disinformation, spreading it constantly and with no constraints of any kind. But the most dangerous development of all in the United States is that the intelligence agencies, the security state, is fully liberated, out in the open, not only to place their senior operatives at our major media outlets, as they have done, but to use their investigative powers and their intelligence and surveillance mechanisms to manipulate our politics, to control the outcome of our elections, to destroy any political leader that gets in their way. The interview I've shown you many times of Chuck Schumer, the Democratic majority leader in the Senate, telling Rachel Maddow that Trump was being stupid for confronting and criticizing the intelligence community because, as he put it, everyone in Washington knows not to do that because they have six different ways to Sunday to get back at you, is really a perfect reflection of the despotic climate that has arisen in the United States. If our intelligence agencies, vested with billions and billions of dollars of budget and the most invasive spying technologies and the most aggressive law enforcement authorities, are now in the business of controlling the flow of information in the United States, of censoring the information that flows on social media, which we know they did from the Twitter files, and of deciding which candidate they want to win and which candidate they want to lose, and then abusing those powers to ensure that that outcome is the one that happens, we really are a democracy in name only. That is the definition of a deep state, a permanent power faction that operates in the dark and with no constraints, and that has no constraints of any kind on their power. That is absolutely the reality in the United States. Anybody who denies it is inherently a disinformation agent. And I think there is no greater danger to all of our interests, to our core political values, than the abuse of the U.S. security state's powers as revealed by multiple investigations, now culminating with this 306-page report. We will definitely devote a show in the future to the granular detail and evidence, because seeing the whole story matters so much. But putting it in context reveals that it is far from an isolated event. It is now the way we do business in the United States, and nothing is more menacing and disturbing and anti-democratic.
All right, you've been listening to Glenn Greenwald's reporting at rumble.com, which you can find it there by searching for Glenn Greenwald at that website. And we have been listening to excerpts from his recent show entitled Durham Report Obliterates FBI for Russiagate Misconduct. To see the entire program, go to rumble.com. However, we are just about out of time. So we thank you for listening, and we'll be with you again next week on Class Matters.